We closed on the house a month ago. Had it inspected inside and out.
For termites, not dead bodies.
Well, we're suing that realtor. You're all witnesses.
Mr. and Mrs. Sawyer, we're going to need you to leave the crime scene. It's our new home.
Well, we'll try not to take too long.
It's all right. It's all right. Just a minute.
Hey. Detectives, what do we got?
Well, judging from the eye orbits, nasal opening, and cheekbone projection, I'd say a Caucasian. Surface of the auricular region puts her under 30.
Her? Did you find any clothes?
A few scraps. Most of the fabric decomposed. But look at the hips. Wide sciatic notch, long pubic bone, definitely female.
Cause of death?
No obvious knife marks or bullet holes. Hopefully I'll know more after I put it back together.
Now, how are we getting sexual homicide from a bunch of bones?
Check the evidence tray.
The crucifix.
I think he means the studded collar and the leash.
Looks like our bone lady was somebody's pet.
In New York City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name's Adam, it's a late night here in Manhattan. I'm joined online by Josh. How are things?
Okay, so the rental situation is more or less ironed out. We finally got the recommendation or whatever from our previous property that we rented from.
Of course, the first of the month has come and gone, and I still see you're in the basement of your in-laws.
yeah, that's true. So we were going to go over and like sign the lease today, but we're getting dumped on.
Like weather-wise,
snow-wise, yeah. It's basically one of those where it's hovering right around freezing.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe getting into the high 20s and is just fucking like when it's like that, it snows more. Mm-hmm. You know, the closer you are to freezing, the bigger the snowfall. I think we're supposed to get like overall probably somewhere around 10 inches of snow over like a 36 hour period. So
nice. Better the kind of snow dumping on you than the John McAfee dumping on you style of dumping on.
Sure.
You know, at least from my perspective. You know.
Yeah.
If it's your thing, it's your thing.
Yeah, I don't need to be shat on by a billionaire, murderer. So we're gonna hopefully be able to sign the lease tomorrow if weather holds up, and then nice. We'll have a prorated month. It's still gonna take us. I wanted to say prolapsed month.
That'd be weird.
Yeah. no, we'll have a prorated month.
Yeah.
For January. So we'll, it's probably going to be at least a week and a half before we're fully moved in.
Yeah.
So whatever.
That's cool. Yeah. Take your time about it. It's
nice. No
at least you're not like being thrown out of your building and you have to do it in a hurry kind of thing.
Sure.
Anyways, I think we should talk about this episode, Josh.
Yeah. We watched an episode of television.
Are you drinking anything?
Bullet Rye Rocks and a
nice
Pamplemousse LaCroix.
I have always been jealous of Josh's fancy beers, and so I have one, finally. It is a Why Not Pale Ale from Alternate Ending Beer Company, which is in Aberdeen, New Jersey. It's quite good.
Right on.
Yeah. Megan went into the beer store, and I said, give me a pale ale. I don't drink enough pale ales, and I feel like it's a fun dice roll because there's a kind of a wide variety of outcomes that you can get.
Yeah, and I think a wider and more interesting variety than you get with IPAs.
Well, with IPAs, I kind of have
Especially now.
Yeah, well, nowadays I feel like I'm always going to get like a New England style. If I just get a random IPA that I'm not familiar with. Unless it says West Coast on it, right? It's going to be hazy and juicy and fruity and, hoppy. And that's good. I like all that stuff.
Yeah, but I like them, but I overdid it, and now it fucks with my stomach. So
yeah, I can see that. But this one's good. Yeah. This one's kind of hazy, like a New England IPA, but it's not quite as hoppy and whatever.
Sure.
So
yep,
I'm digging it. But yeah, man, we have another episode which makes us ask the question: what was the deal with SVU's Romanian kind of thing in its early seasons.
So strange.
We are watching this season 2 episode. It's season 2, episode 19. It's called Parasites. We'll get to that name in a little while.
Yeah, not aptly.
No, not in any ways it apt, but
no, we'll get there later. It's actually factually incorrect, but whatever.
So let's talk about this episode. Mr. Sawyer's getting a fresh jacuzzi in his backyard. But in addition to hydrangea roots, his work crew finds the skeletal remains of a young woman buried in the garden. Emmy Taylor determines it was a sexual homicide based on the crucifix and studded S&M dog collar found amongst the remains. A neighbor points Olivia towards the previous owners of the house, Brad Stanton, his first wife Abby, and his second wife Pam. Abby had a drug problem and there was constant yelling, which culminated in a fight between Pam and Abby. The neighbor never saw Abby after that, though the body wasn't Abby's since she is still clinging onto life at a hospice for AIDS patients. Taylor's autopsy shows evidence of a struggle before the woman was strangled to death. Her teeth showed that she might have come originally from Eastern Europe, and Henry, a forensic anthropologist, de-ages the corpse bones to get a picture of what our dead woman might have looked like had she still had skin to wear. Munch and Finn start sifting through tenant records from the dumpy apartment complex next to the burial yard. The unit starts calling the dozens of potentially Eastern European women who had leases in 1998 to start excluding potential victims. Cross-referencing the renters they couldn't track down with missing persons leads them to the file of Ava Parulis, a Romanian woman who was reported missing in 1998 by her brother-in-law, George Burton. George lives in Rigo Park with his four-year-old daughter, Julia, and his wife, Irina, Ava's twin sister. The two sisters moved to the U.S. together 5 years ago, but while Irina was modest and happy with a quiet life and family, Ava was a wild party girl with many rich boyfriends. When Ava didn't show up to Julia's first birthday party, Irina wrote her off. George tried to make amends with his sister-in-law, but found her apartment empty and no trace of Ava, so he notified the police, thinking something might be amiss. George remembers one of Ava's exes, a creepy importer named Matt who keeps framed photographs of all his fuck buddies on an end table. Matt and Ava broke up after she threw a $1,000 bottle of perfume in his face because it wasn't jewelry, but he ran into her later at the UN where he saw her leave with the deputy chief of mission to the UN from Romania. Though arresting a diplomat will be next to impossible, there's no harm in asking him a few questions about Ava, so Cragen sends Ben Abler over for a chat. The diplomat, Razvan Toscu, says he wasn't romantically involved with Ava, but basically employed her to act as his escort at official parties since she spoke the language and was sophisticated enough for his guests. Toscu had no ideas about who might have murdered Ava, but he does have quite a lot to say about the many rare orchid hybrids that he's cultivated in his office. At the tenement next to the gravesite, the building super tells Manchuola that she remembers Ava's haughty attitude and that a well-dressed older man used to visit her from time to time. She lets them into Ava's old apartment, which has a perfect view of the Sawyer's garden. Oda and Munch also get the details on Ava's immigration status. She came over on a fiancé visa. She was betrothed to one Paul Amos through a mail-order bride company called Euromatch. Paul is a real piece of shit who, quote-unquote, returned Ava after a 90-day trial period since she wasn't wifey enough for his liking. In fact, she'd started sleeping with the dentist to the stars who thought he was going to marry her too, but called it off when he found out she was a mail-order bride. He does provide the SVUs with Ava's dental records for a match so they can finally know for sure that she's the victim. Across town, Munch and Finn meet Valentina Bălescu, the proprietress of Euromatch. She tells them a little about the business, including how they do thorough background checks on the men, and would never knowingly set up a match with an abusive man. She also knows about Irina, who is one of their success stories since her relationship with George was going so well. The dental records throw a pretty big wrench into the case. The body was not that of Ava, but of her identical twin, Irina. Irina is Ava, and vice versa. When the unit arrives at George's house, it looks like Ava left in a hurry with nothing but all the cash she could find. George doesn't believe it until they show him the crucifix from the grave. Ava, as Irina, told him she'd lost her faith 3 years ago, but now he realizes what happened. George, Benson, and Stabler go to check on Julia at school. Thankfully, she's there, but her mom had stopped by earlier and was in a hurry to leave. Julia mentions a puppet man who was there whenever Mommy visited her friend Valentina. So Tutu Unch head back to Euromatch, where they meet the puppet man, confront him about regular cash payments Ava had been making to Valentina, and strong-arm him into revealing that Valentina has another office for her other businesses at a warehouse in Chelsea. The warehouse is a not remotely disguised brothel, and they are quickly able to arrest Valentina. They also find Ava next to a pile of cash hugging a woman who turns out to be Ava's little sister, Oksana. All of the payments to Valentina were in the service of buying Oksana's freedom from the sexual slavery of Valentina. Ava says she found Irina dead in her apartment, dragged her body all the way down the stairs to the neighbor's yard where she buried her. She says she thinks that whoever killed Irina was trying to kill her, so she stole her sister's identity to hide from Valentina's goons. The SVUs don't believe that Ava was physically capable of moving her sister, so they talk to Oksana to try and see if Ava was lying about anything else. Oksana tells them that she's been stuck in that hellhole for years since her own mail-order husband reneged on the marriage. Instead of getting deported, Valentina forced Oksana into sex slavery to pay off the debt of repaying the ex-husband. She couldn't run since Valentina threatened to murder both of her sisters if she had. Munch and Finn go looking for Valentina's bookkeeping records, and Puppet Man tells them that the Romanian deputy chief of mission, Toscu, used to have regular closed-door meetings with Valentina, which is of course a huge problem due to his diplomatic immunity. George and Ava talk, and she tells him how she found her dead sister in a trash bag next to her building after she confronted Toscu. Toscu had raped Irina with the dog collar on before strangling her, and Ava was certain she'd come after Ava and George and Julia next, so she stole her sister's rings and assumed her identity. She tells him that her wildlife, her jewelry, the money she took, it was all to free Oksana. George isn't happy with her explanation and storms off. Cabot pulls in a friend from the State Department to attempt to get Romania to waive diplomatic immunity in the case of Toscu. The Romanians are unwilling to give up Toscu with no evidence beyond the testimony of Ava, so the U.S. declares Toscu persona non grata, which means he must leave the country within 48 hours. Of course, the SVUs aren't happy, but Cabot thinks the Romanians will play ball if the SVUs can produce some physical evidence of his guilt. Thankfully, some strange samples from Irina's panties were sent off to a forensic geologist, so Benson and Stabler head to his office to try to get some results before Toscu leaves the country. The geologist agrees to work late, and Stabler and Benson arrive at the Romanian consulate early the next morning to place Toscu in cuffs, and we are left with a, don't create your own unique orchid hybrids, leave your pollen all over your victim's lingerie, and expect to get away with murder afterwards, Dick Wolf.
A lot of plot.
A lot of characters. A lot of...
Fucking hell. I left out so many because it's just like, I can't talk about everybody. So if they didn't have something interesting or they didn't do something that I felt was like too big to skip over, they're getting left out of this one. There's like 95 different people.
It's crazy how many people are in this. Crazy. And there's like multiple different people that we really think might have done it. For a little while, when the first time you're watching, obviously yeah. Not the second time you're watching, no. But you're like, oh, it was probably that creep, and then that creep's just gone, never brought up
yeah.
again.
And they're like five different that creeps.
yeah, there yeah. really are.
So for guest stars, we've already talked about Lance Reddick, who's playing Emmy Taylor, very obviously. Good. We did that in episode 54. I really have to do a rectal, so
yeah.
We're discussing season 1, episode 22, Slaves. We've also already talked about Michelle Pauk, who's a Tony winner. She's playing Valentina Blescu.
Yeah.
We talked about her in episode 36, He Let Ed Teabag Him, Right? Mm-hmm. Where we're discussing season 3, episode 13, Prodigy. She was playing a different character there, obviously.
Yeah.
And we've also already talked about Matt Servito, and we did that very recently because we saw him in episode 129. Man, one really suffers from my own special victims unit derangement syndrome. We're discussing season 4, episode 23, Grief. He's playing Dr. Brad Stanton here. We did talk about Millie Avital some back in episode 1, but well,
That's not even on the public feed anymore, and Josh definitely wasn't as thorough.
No, I did. I know we talked about her a lot more though. Although we did record twice, so maybe it's more in the one we didn't release. Anyway, So Millie Avital's playing Irina, and later we find out that she's playing Ava Burton. We saw her all the way back in episode one, Dick Wolf being Dick Wolf, where we're talking about the pilot payback. She was playing Marta Stevens there, the war crime avenger who cut off her former abusers. And by abuser, I mean, you know, tormentor, whore, like horrific war crimes rapist.
Yeah.
She cut his dick off. So good riddance. Good riddance to that unit.
Yeah.
So she was born in Jerusalem. Both of her parents are Sephardic Jews, her father having been born in Morocco and her mother being Israeli born, but of Turkish Jewish descent. She was raised in Tel Aviv and Ra'anana and attended the Thelma Yalin High School of the Arts in Givatayim. Maybe. I'm just going to, if I breeze through that name, maybe I pronounced it correctly. it could be Givatayim or Givatayim.
Whatever. It could be a lot of things, man.
It could be a lot of things. I'm not familiar with many Israeli settlements names and how to pronounce them. So she started her career in Israel, where she won an Israeli Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress in 1991. In 1993, she came to New York City to study acting at the Circle in the Square Theater School. She was discovered by an agent while she was waiting tables and was subsequently cast as the female lead in Stargate. That was in 1994, so like a year after coming to the U.S. She's been in the films Dead Man, Invasion of Privacy, The End of Violence, Polish Wedding, Animals, Kissing a Fool, The Human Stain, and When Do We Eat? She was main cast in the show Landing on Their Feet and had recurring roles in Damages and Prisoners of War. This is the second of four SVUs she's appeared in as three different characters. She's also in one episode of Criminal Intent. She dated David Schwimmer. Obviously, that was around the time the Kissing a Fool happened. Nice. They broke up in, I think, 2002 or 2001. And then she ended up marrying Oscar-winning screenwriter Charles Randolph, who wrote The Big Short. Nice. Or co-wrote The Big Short. They've been married since 2004, and they've got two children together. Then we've got Gary Bassaraba, who's playing George Burton.
Yeah.
He was born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Makes sense.
He looks like he's a... He looks like he's from Edmonton. He graduated from the Yale School of Drama in 1982. He's been in the films Alamo Bay, Sweet Dreams, One Magic Christmas, No Mercy, Who's That Girl, The Last Temptation of Christ, The Dark Wind, Fried Green Tomatoes, Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle, The War, Striptease, Unfaithful, Charlotte's Web, The Taking of Pelham 123, the second one, not the original, The Accountant, Suburbicon, Little Italy, The Irishman, and Killers of the Flower Moon. You know, this Scorsese movie that's going to come out this year. He's been in like three Scorsese movies, which is weird.
He must be a very good actor, but it's not clear from this role.
It's not clear here. he was main cast in Brooklyn South, Boomtown, and Mixed Blessings. He had recurring roles or was in multiple episodes of Miami Vice, NYPD Blue, Judging Amy, Everybody Hates Chris, Mad Men, and Women of the Movement. He's been in two episodes of the original series, one New York Undercover, one Homicide, one more SVU, and two episodes of Chicago Justice. Yeah, I don't even know how that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you in two episodes of Chicago Justice?
If you're not main cast, maybe they did a two-parter or something like that.
A 13 episode season. There were 13 episodes of that show and they did a two-parter. I mean, that makes sense.
Dick Wolf loves two-parters.
But that's also like a Chernuchin nonsensical thing that would happen. Anyway.
Yeah.
Then we've got Melissa Bowen, who's playing Pam Stanton, the wife of the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She was in two episodes of Space Above and Beyond and is married to Joel Delafuente.
Oh, nice.
So she's married to Taru Morales.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Then we've got not much else to talk about. I tried to figure out more about her, but that's all I got. So then we've got Michael Barese, Barisi. I don't know how to say his last name. Who knows? He's playing Matt Sloan. He doesn't even know. His mom doesn't know. His dad doesn't know. No one knows how to pronounce his last name. He was born in Holyoke, Massachusetts. He was raised primarily in Joliet, Illinois, probably in the prison. I don't know. His father was a chemical engineer. His mother is the artist and author, Cynthia Barisi Plosky.
Okay.
He worked at Disney theme parks in Orlando and Tokyo before moving to New York City, where he made his Broadway debut in the 1990 revival of Fiddler on the Roof. In 1992, his dance group, The Boys Back East, won $100,000 on Star Search as the best new dance group. He's done a ton of stage work and was nominated for a Tony in 2000. So, like, right this year, right? This was... right before this, the year before this. He was nominated for a Tony for Best Featured Actor in a Musical for his performance in Kiss Me, Kate. He's been in the films AI, Artificial Intelligence, Meet Dave, State of Play, The Bourne Legacy, and Split. He also had recurring roles in The Nick and Crossbones, and he directed and choreographed the musical Title of Show. Inside brackets. So it's bracket, opening bracket, title of show, end bracket. Co-created by and starring his husband, Jeff Bowen, who I could not confirm was or was not related to Melissa Bowen. It could be a whole all in the family thing going on here, but I can neither confirm nor deny that. Then we've got Manu Narayan, Henry, who I've met.
Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah. He was in that Indian movie.
Nice.
That I worked on.
Badass.
That never happened. Mm-hmm. But we shot 3 fucking weeks of it. Anyway, so I've been in his apartment because I had to drop off a script there. He was very nice. He offered me a beer. I couldn't take it, sadly.
Well, because you were working?
Yeah, which is dumb.
The age progression specialist.
Yes.
The Cornelius Ladd stand-in.
Sure.
For fans of Nathan For You.
Yeah. He's an accomplished classical saxophonist in the Western and South Indian Carnatic styles.
That sounds kind of badass.
Yeah. While at Carnegie Mellon, I'm finding out all of this stuff about him now. I wish I'd known it when I was on set with him for weeks. while he was at Carnegie Mellon University, he won the concerto competition and performed the Glazunov Saxophone Concerto with orchestra at Carnegie Hall in Pittsburgh. Mm. He studied the Carnatic saxophone in Mangalore, India with Sri Kadri Gopalnath.
I had no idea that the saxophone was like a South Indian staple.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
He was also he played on All India Radio after winning the All India Radio music competition.
Huh.
He made his Broadway debut in Bombay Dreams, originating the role of the hero Akash. That's Bombay Dreams was co-written by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Nice.
He's done a ton of stage work, both in New York and at big regional theaters. He's been in the films The Love Guru, and he's in The Love Guru a lot.
Yeah.
He's on the soundtrack of The Love Guru. he's on The Love Guru a lot.
I mean, good for him, but also I feel bad.
I know.
it's really rough.
Yeah, he's playing Rajneesh in it, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it's a rough movie. He's also in The Last Airbender, another rough movie. And things that, like, on paper when you're going in would maybe not be that bad.
Oh, yeah. Both of those you go in
thinking, oh, great. Oh, sure. This is going to, like, elevate my career.
Austin and Powers 4, not. Right? Yep. You know, basically. Yep. Nope.
Yeah. No, it is not, sadly.
The Last Airbender. All those kids are obsessed with this cartoon, right?
Yeah, they are. And holy shit. Wow. Did this movie not work?
Yeah.
He's also in smaller films, Good Night, Good Morning, Walk Away, A Cinderella Story, Once Upon a Song, and 99 Homes. And then obviously there was the Indian movie that never fully went that he was going to be the romantic lead in. He's had one-off parts in The Sopranos, Nurse Jackie, Rubicon, Unforgettable, The Following, Grey's Anatomy, and The Blacklist. He served as a trustee of Carnegie Mellon University from 2013 to 2016. He's also got a music career as a singer and songwriter that has had him singing at state dinners, collaborating like George W. Bush's first visit to the UK, his first official visit to the UK. Manu Narayan was singing there.
It's fascinating.
He's collaborated on and recorded originals and covers for soundtracks. He also has collaborated with Grammy winner Frank London numerous times, including on his London's Klezmer concept album, Night in the Old Marketplace. And then he did a Klezmer Desi collaboration with London and the master percussionist Deep Singh. That project was called Sharabi. He's also lead singer of the band Darunam, which is basically a reversed merger of his first name and Radovan Jovicevic, who is a founding member of the Yugoslavian band Grupa Zana, who probably had a fairly big Eastern European following in the 80s. They fuse Indian, American, and Serbian melodies and rhythms.
Sure, man. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. So, weird, like a whole weird, like musical side to Manu Narayan that I had no idea about. Obviously he could sing because he's in, he's in a Indian Bollywood movie.
Yeah.
But, he was in one that ended up never going back into production. But
you assume he can dance and probably sing, but
I can attest to the fact that he can both sing and dance because I've seen it happen. But
nice.
Yeah. Nice. They shot 3 fucking days in a soundstage, so I saw him dance a lot.
Were they like flying through the air? Was it a big
the first
set
week?
Piece?
Oh yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Awesome. There was rigging. Nice. There were also scenes with rigging outside in like Long Beach. Mm-hmm. The first week was the music. Like we got a week through and had shot an eighth of a page.
Nice. Well,
and 3 days of it was on the soundstage. So I mean, you're like, what the awesome. Fuck is going on? No, it was terrible.
I mean, it sounds awesome. Like if you could,
if you're not
it.
Working, if you're working, you're just like, it was a lot. At least it wasn't, it wasn't dialogue driven because they were shooting everything in 3 languages. So they're shooting everything in triplicate, but
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that made for some very long days where you're like, wow, we're still on this setup 4 hours later.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Mm-hmm. Manu, seriously, like, super great guy. You really wanted it to, like, work out for him for this movie. Like, specifically, he was the one in the cast that you're like, it'd be really nice for him to, like, actually have this go well.
But apparently he's crushing it with his music career, so
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. And I mean, he's doing a shitload of stage work. So then you've got Jerome LePage, who's playing. I'm assuming he's related to the governor of Maine.
Right? Yeah, well, ex governor.
Isn't
of
that
Maine
LePage?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that guy's a fucking shithead.
Yeah, real
anyway,
shithead.
Yeah. So he's playing Paul Amos, also a shithead. So I guess fitting.
Yeah.
Jerome LePage was in the films Miss 45. Medium Straight, Palookaville, The Florentine, Analyze That, and Rachel Getting Married. He's in 1 episode of New York Undercover and 3 episodes of the original series. Next up, Marcia Helfrich.
Yeah.
Who's playing Mrs. Varela, who I presume is the landlady or super or whatever.
The flop house tenement lady.
Yes. Yeah. She was born in Manhattan, the first of 3 children of Herbert and Judith Helfrich. Her father was a noted pianist. That's pianist with a T at the end. Listeners, I know you want it to be penis.
Maybe he did.
A noted pianist, composer, folklorist, and editor.
Interesting. How did you become a noted folklorist?
I don't know.
I need to get into that.
I mean,
gig.
The only one I can think of is William Butler Yeats. He's like the only I know, because he did that volume of traditional Irish folklore that he edited also.
Yeah, and what's his name, the Texas guy? Why am I blanking?
Kinky Friedman.
No, Dobie. Frank J. Frank Dobie.
I'm joking.
J. Frank Dobie is a noted folklorist. Yeah. Also was. He's been dead for like 50 years. But yes.
Marcia Helfrich graduated from Performing Arts High School, which obviously is, you know, eventually had LaGuardia's name attached to it and was the fame school. She's a life member of the Actor Studio and a longtime member of the Ensemble Studio Theater. She's also the founder and artistic director of the Off-Off-Broadway company and venue, the Common Basis Theater, originally called the Common Ground Theater. Her experience writing, directing, and acting in the theater is wildly long. It is so, like, her page on Wikipedia is ludicrous. She studied with Lee Strasberg from the early 1960s until his death and taught at the Lee Strasberg Institute for 5 years. Wow. She was also an adjunct professor at Columbia for 2 years. Her students over the years have included Ellen Barkin, Alec Baldwin, Uma Thurman, Janine Turner, David Duchovny, and Harvey Keitel.
It's a pretty good list of students.
Uh-huh. Yep. she's been in the films Dog Day Afternoon,
yep.
The Day Trippers, the 2005 incarnation of the producers, Win Win, which is fucking great. I love that movie. That was the Tom McCarthy directed it, and it's got Paul Giamatti as a wrestling coach.
Nice.
She's also in All Is Bright and Something from Tiffany's, which I literally watched on Friday.
Nice.
I just watched it.
Nice. How was it?
It's fine. Well. It's a Zoe Deutsch movie.
Okay.
And Zoe Deutsch is a national treasure.
Yeah.
She's like my favorite person. Mm. Anyway, Halfrecht also wrote and directed the 2018 short Full Moon and High Tide in the Ladies Room. She was in 3 episodes of the original series and 1 Criminal Intent. Just got 2 more. Mm-hmm. We've got Steve Harper, who's playing Andrew Heaton.
Yeah.
He is the geologist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He was born in Brooklyn, raised on Long Island. He graduated from Yale and then the ART Institute for Advanced Theater Training at Harvard and the playwriting program at Juilliard. He has a shitload of like fellowships and awards that he's received as a writer. He was second billed in the series. He was second billed in the web series Send Me with Tracy Toms and Gabrielle Carteris, which he also wrote and which garnered Tracy Toms an Emmy nomination. He was in 1 episode of Homicide and 1 episode of Criminal Intent. He has some other like one-off credits too. But he was writing staff on Covert Affairs for its 3rd and 4th seasons. He was executive story editor on American Crime's 3rd season. He was a producer, or he was at the producer level of the writing staff, and then a writer on season 2 of God Friended Me. And then moved up to co-producer and writer on Tell Me Your Secrets. And then he was supervising producer in season 2 and co-EP on season 3 of Stargirl. So he's a TV writer now.
Nice.
And then we've got Andrea Burns. It's probably Andrea because I've seen her credited in some as with an accent over the E. So it's probably Andrea Burns. She's playing the teacher in the classroom. Mm. We saw her back in Munch My Benson episode 21. Oh, Quaaludes. Q Adams Drug Dive.
Yeah.
Where we were discussing season 18, episode 9, Decline and Fall, where she was playing Cynthia's civil attorney. She was born in Miami Beach to a Jewish father and Venezuelan mother. She graduated from Miami's New World School of the Arts. She's appeared on Broadway as Belle in Beauty and the Beast, Daniela in The Heights, and Vicki Nichols in The Full Monty. She's been in the films The Prince, Akron, and West Side Story. Mm. Obviously the new one, not the one with Natalie Wood and whoever else was in Rita Moreno. She's in 2 episodes of Blue Bloods.
Nice.
That's all I got.
You know, there's a couple other weird ones. Like,
yeah, but it's minute 49.
You know? I know, but like you got like people like Irene Bordon, who I'm not even sure who she was playing. Teresa,
one of the women in the brothel.
Yeah, she's a little bit older, so maybe she was the one who was screaming at everybody that the police were there.
Yeah, yeah.
She's been in like a million Hungarian films, and the only reason I bring her up is I think they missed an opportunity to have, instead of it being Romanians, which they've been pressing the Romanian button pretty hard in seasons 1 and 2. Why not press the Hungarian button and see if Hargitay can, you know, whip out a couple you know, phrases right. from the old country, right? Because they another thing they like to do in the early seasons is have the whole unit sitting around the bullpen making phone calls to people that don't speak English. That's we've seen this a few times. And typically we'll see like Cassidy attempt to speak a foreign language or something like that, which is always fun. And it would be kind of nice to see if, you know, Liv has a few phrases, you know, stashed in there somewhere. We can move on. I think we can move to the episode, Josh.
So we've got these guys in the yard. And
let's talk their hydrangea scheme.
Let's talk about the Hackensack hydrangea market.
Those hydrangea bushes?
Well, I think I said we clear the yard for nothing. We're gonna make more off those bushes than off this job. I know a guy in Hackensack.
Oh, jeez.
What?
If you don't know about the Hackensack hydrangea market, it is world famous for being out of control. Like, they are gonna get theirs and then some.
Because I'm telling you, Josh, I'm on Home Depot's website right now, and I'm looking at all varieties of different hydrangeas that are available.
These are mature, though. These are mature. The root structure, you dig that hole, you fill in the dirt. These motherfuckers are going to bloom and bloom hard.
I'm talking like these $40 for a large, you know, a 2 gallon.
The Hackensackians will go nuts for these hydrangeas.
But like, what? Okay, so how much do you think it would cost to hire a gardener to clear a backyard of weeds? Couple $100 probably. So I'm just like, what return are these guys expecting on the hydrangeas?
Thousands of dollars.
It's ludicrous. Like, yeah, maybe unique orchid
hybrids.
They're
gonna take it to hydrangea Mecca, Hackensack, New Jersey.
To be fair, there are a lot of hydrangeas around the New York City area. We see them quite a bit. And what's nice about them, they bloom for a long time when they're in the soil. You know, they don't bloom very, very long as cut flowers. But also, okay.
You said as cock flowers, right?
How deep do you need to dig a hole in order to, like, plant hydrangeas? This is the question. This is the biggest question I have of the whole episode.
Because, like, are they digging a grave in the backyard? That that body was buried deep.
Like, deep. It's 3 years. Deep. Right? Like, one thing when the soil has kind of shifted over the course of 50 years or something like that. But we're talking 3 years. So somebody dug a 6-foot deep fucking pit in order to dig that body in. Which is good, you know, good grave digging protocols, because you dig it too shallow, the animals get into it, the rain washes it out. You want to dig down deep. That takes a while.
Oh, yeah.
Like a long while, like a really long while. Unless you have a backhoe, it takes a fucking while. Also, other issue I have here, there's no alleyway there, right?
There's two this fences. Layout makes no sense. It makes no sense for being able to get a random body into that backyard. It's baffling. There's none of that makes sense. Like when you're looking at the presumed property, like I feel like they're cheating too, but when you're looking at what you're told is the vantage point of the backyard from the apartments above, it still doesn't make sense.
Let's say you can drag it through your apartment complex. Like there's like a back door of the apartment complex. Yeah. They don't have those, right? They don't have those. But let's just say that they do for shits and giggles. Then there's like another fence. There's two fences that we can see from the view. Chain link fences, 4-foot tall fences. You're going to throw, I mean, sure, she's petite, but still, you're going to throw like a 110-pound woman over those fences twice?
You're going to throw yourself over that fence.
Exactly.
She's literally throwing herself over. I really also love that Mrs. Sawyer, when she gets into the mix after the body's been discovered and all the police are there. Uh-huh. She really wants to like stay there. Mm-hmm. It's like you want that badly.
Yeah, you
to hang out with the human remains that were found in your backyard. You don't want to like leave. Mm-hmm.
I feel like
the city would pay for your hotel room for a night or two.
They might. I mean, it might.
While your house is crime scened.
15 to 20 years.
Yeah, it would take 6 years
to get
reimbursed.
Still.
My notes are going to go fast.
That's great. We get a couple nice little crucifix jokes here, which are
which I don't feel like any of them make sense.
Well, because like, they're like
the crucifix,
oh, that's
with
sick.
The dog collar and the sex crimes. I don't know. I don't understand how that tracks.
Because it's like it's a the dog collar, it's a little, sure, like joke timing, right? Because it's like, oh, mm-hmm, that's sick. The crucifix? Question mark. And then Munch is like, Captain, how sick is this crucifix? I don't. It doesn't quite make sense, but it is.
It's at least a nugget of little fun, but it. I don't think it actually, like, logically.
No, holds, but I think the idea is it's like Elliot's the first one because there's somebody like, because he hears about the, you know, that it's, sure, a sex crime. And he says, with the crucifix, and that's funny because he's Catholic, and that's the only thing we know about him. And then Munch says that the crucifix is sick because he's Munch, and he thinks that, I don't know, the Catholicism,
organized religion is sick. Yeah,
yeah, it's a vast conspiracy to enslave us,
sure,
all, you know.
I mean. It's not that, probably.
But yeah. Well, you
whatever.
Know.
Well, I don't, yeah, want
to.
Whatever.
We don't need to fully cast aspersions, yeah, but yeah, but you know, we.
I mean, the Holy Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, I mean, to quote Philip,
look
K.
at all,
Dick,
look at all the gold they're using.
The empire never ended, man.
Yeah.
Anyways,
the Stanton family drama seems like a lot.
It just seems unnecessary, right? This is one of, like, if I were going to leave out a whole plot line and,
it's
and
this,
get...
And flesh out the other stuff?
Yeah, this is the least useful part of it, the Stanton family drama. Now, I like Matt Servino, and I like Matt Servino as this character.
Yeah, he's oddly sympathetic and and is like, no, I mean, what, you know, the whole bit about like watching your wife deteriorate and, yeah, you know, like losing her to addiction.
Yeah, you kind of you understand a lot about their dynamic in a very short amount of time. So good on that world being created. Of course, it's created
and then immediately wrapped up.
Yeah, it's like 6 minutes that we just. That are just gone from the episode, which is fine because everything, sure, else goes just as fast.
Oh yeah. It's also, I'm going to skip ahead and come back, but it's also kind of odd. I don't think I've ever seen age-related dementia in anything. I mean, I'm sure it's a thing. Like, yeah, again, it's Neil Baer. He was a doctor. I'm not. It's also kind of strange how often AIDS and HIV were used in the, let's say, certainly the one point, or the not prehistory, but the Bear, you know, seasons 2 through season 12. And then, I mean, I'm hard pressed to think of a single episode that we've seen from, you know, season 13 on where HIV is even mentioned.
Well, I mean, you just have to remember, I mean, I know you remember this, but just how much of a cultural impact AIDS epidemic made in the 90s, yeah, right? When we were younger.
Or the 80s. I mean,
well, definitely the 80s, yeah, but just like, so through our growing up, it was like such a big part of the culture, yeah, that.
Because we were both born in a decade before that. We were, yeah, born in the 70s. So.
Yeah, we're born in 1979. Yeah, so, yeah, but then, so like our whole, like, but basically through that time, like it was a huge part of.
Yeah.
Of
just, and certainly by the time we're, like, by the time we're eight or so. You know, it's like, oh, Ryan White, or like, you know, yeah, they're like all of these, oh, like AIDS related, like, touchstones.
AIDS quilt, where, and, you know, mm-hmm, people are dropping dead left and right. And then, yep, but then finally at this point is, I think is when it's kind of beginning to like leave at least the popular, sure, consciousness in the West. Because,
but for a show that is about sex crimes. It's a little strange.
You think it's weird
that
it's
basically
it so
disappeared.
Yeah, it's interesting,
you know?
Right? But I mean, I guess I'd have to go back and look at our notes. Yeah, that's a good question. Is AIDS no longer hot, Josh?
So this property manager is awful at doing doing office work.
Oh yeah, but that's what you expect. I mean, that's why they're getting such a cheap rent on. Which, okay, so she says. We don't know exactly where this building is ever, but yeah, she mentions that Ava was prancing around like the Tsarina of 13th Street.
Uh-huh.
And since the body was found in the yard right there, that means it had to have been a 13th Street in Manhattan. And there's, yeah, only one 13th Street, right, in Manhattan. It's not like...
Well, it wasn't in Manhattan, they wouldn't have been...
Exactly, because they wouldn't have been the ones showing up. It would have been some other fucking person's job. Anyways, it's not like Queens where there's like multiple different 13th streets that will intersect each other. There's only one 13th Street. And I was looking, there are a couple blocks that have something that could have maybe been like a crumbling tenement block with some brownstones on the block. But that where they were was definitely like those backyards were not these backyards that I'm looking at in Google Earth. Of course, who knows? Maybe they changed in the intervening years, but it didn't look like Lower Manhattan to me from that window. And I mean, that's where it would have been, because that would be either the Village or the... Well, actually, it would have been the Village, because the East Village doesn't have... On 13th Street, the East Village is like bigger buildings, because that's where NYU buildings are and things like that. Or they're like old walk-ups, so more like the tenement, but no brownstones on the same block.
Sure. Now, when they were in Emmy Taylor's office, or the, sorry, the Emmy's, whatever.
Wait, Taylor's office. Big problem here.
Oh, yeah. Liv posits that maybe it was autoerotic asphyxiation, but he mistimes it.
But who mistimes it? Cause
we're AEA aficionados here at Much My Benson.
Yes, we are. We're positive about AEA as long as you have some safety precautions, right, in place. However...
It's our sworn duty to point out that
one does not AEA to somebody else. It is just erotic asphyxiation if you're doing it to somebody else.
Auto is auto self. About it. Yeah, auto is done by yourself. You are doing the strangulation. So
get it right, Liv.
Yeah, God, Jesus, Liv. It's just disrespectful to all autoerotic asphyxiation aficionados.
It's disrespectful to Casey Novak.
Novak is gonna roll in, and she's gonna be like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Mm-hmm. So Soviet dentists did use arsenic in root canals.
Nice.
Like, from what I can tell, from what I can verify online, maybe it's a bunch of SVU fans going online and writing accounts of this, but I doubt it. So it would stand to reason that that could have gone through the rest of the Eastern Bloc.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have Romania coming in. No good can come from that.
Yeah.
We also he
we've done a deep dive on Romania in the past. I'm not going to go over that again.
We don't need to do that again.
I believe that was in Slaves, right? I think it was. Yeah,
definitely was.
Which was the Andrew McCarthy episode. Really fun episode. Highly recommend that one.
Yeah. So if you want to go back, that one is episode 54.
I talk a lot about the post Ceausescu regime, which was kind of would go back and forth between various kleptocrats for a little while. So I guess one. You know, it makes sense that people would be fleeing the kind of broken state of Romania in the late 1990s. Of course, nowadays things have changed quite a bit. And I think it's totally fine.
Now, of course, Razvan Toscu says that orchids are parasitic.
They are not parasitic, no. Josh. I went to the American Orchid Society's website, and
well, to be fair, I mean they're big orchid.
They are a big orchid. They're big orchid.
So can they be trusted?
I don't know. Their FAQ page, and one of the lines is, are orchids parasites? And this is what the American Orchid Society says.
But you know what FAQ also can be sort of slant rhymed into saying? What? Fuck you.
So here, are orchids parasites? Absolutely not. Of the approximately 20,000 species of orchids that grow around the world, not one is parasitic. In nature, many orchids cling to trees and bushes as a growth habitat, but they take nothing from the host plant and do not injure it in any way. Orchids that grow on trees are called epiphytes or air plants. So there you go, guys. I don't care for this orchid slander, okay?
This episode is suffering from not having a horticulturalist on staff.
Dude, absolutely. All they needed to do was hire a New Yorker reporter to fly to South Florida, start banging some like redneck orchid sniffer, and maybe it would be a more accurate depiction of reality.
as was depicted in the documentary.
Yeah.
adaptation.
It was. It was.
That is how it happened. Susan Orlean.
So also, yeah, adaptation is a blow-by-blow account of Susan Orlean's experiences writing a New Yorker article and book.
Absolutely. So then we find out that we've not just got Romanians, but we've got Romanian twins, which means even less good can come from this equation than was thought of before.
I mean, how... Yeah, it's honestly surprising that we haven't gotten more of these twin traps in SVU.
I know.
It's such a lazy trope. We've gotten a
few recently, but it's so delightful. Like, I feel like I'm stepping into a soap opera,
right?
In the best possible ways.
And by a soap opera, like you know, like a Guiding Light from 1988.
No, I meant daytime soap. Yeah. then we see the parade of rich men Ava was working.
As it turns out, in the most kind of like you think that she was just, you know, doing it for fun and her own enrichment, but it turns out it was all for
because
a
she's
noble
one of
purpose.
Those Russian Natashas.
Natashas.
As one of the dickbags says, I think was that the
that was the dentist to the stars, which it's like, come on, dude, you're the dentist to the stars, and you're like a extremely attractive Eastern European woman is flirting with you. Of course she wants your money, not because she's Eastern European, because
you're not really bringing that much to the table looks wise bro.
Exactly. Like, why, what do you guys have in common? Like,
you're not even a real doctor, you're a DDS.
But what are you guys going to talk about besides how much money you're hauling in from doing, I don't know,
from doing people in the chair while you've knocked
doing
them
Ed
out.
Asner's, you know, crowns, right? I mean, anyways, fuck that guy. Fuck that dentist. He was one of my least favorite ones. Better than
your favorite was Matt Sloan.
Matt Sloan, there was an interesting kind of air about Matt Sloan, and I wanted to know more about him. He was the importer.
Of the pictures of the ladies on his
he has had a collection of pictures of
so
his girlfriends.
Odd what Who the fuck that? That's your office, dude. Whatever.
But who does that? That's so weird.
Matt Sloan does. I love that the property manager thinks the city should reimburse her for the lost rent after Ava was murdered.
Yeah. A lot of people are thinking that they're going to get reimbursed for things they're not going to get reimbursed for. Like suing the realtor because there's a dead body found in the backyard. Yeah, it's like,
sure.
How is the realtor supposed to know that? I mean, I might be alone in thinking this, but I think that the biggest piece of shit in this whole episode is ex-husband Paul Amos, right?
I thought you were going to say the puppet.
The puppet man? Well, puppet man was definitely like...
No, I'm joking. No, Paul Amos. Presumably Kingsley Amos's son and Martin Amos's brother.
Well, okay. Does he write boring novels about college? That's what I wanted to know. I mean, that's what I assume.
Euromatch probably would have worked better for Munch.
The joke, of course, is that Munch would have the kind of relationship he has with all of his wives with his mail order bride, right? Yeah, Munch is not... this psychopathic, like...
Well, can he make sure they're Marxists, though?
I don't know if you can check that box. But what was what's Paul Amos's angle, right? So he's got a ponytail.
Oh, yeah.
You know what he's doing? He's like a guy who doesn't work out trying to pull off the Duncan MacLeod. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Like the Highlander, the TV series look.
It was
the
still
Adrian
like...
Paul look.
Highlander, the TV show, was still like in the ether, in the air at this point.
Sure, sure.
So, like, I get like why he'd be going for it.
I mean,
but you know, this guy
Paul is a iconic, you know, sex, you know, like a. I can understand why people want
sex pest.
No, people want to look joking, like Adrian Paul. You know, like he's Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. You know, he's been learning how to love women.
He's
for
poor man's Christopher Lambert.
No, he's been loving women for 500 years, from the highlands of Scotland to the shores of Japan and everywhere in between. And I get it. Like
Was it Paris? Yeah.
He splits his time between a barge in Paris and a dojo in Vancouver. The guy is pretty fucking awesome. Yeah. Still, you got to know, as they say, when to hold them and when to fold them, because Paul Amos can't pull off that look.
Also, you know, Paul Amos stormed the Capitol on January 6th.
100%.
This guy's a J6er.
This guy's probably in Congress right now voting against Kevin McCarthy. Voting against McCarthy.
Yeah, that's going on right now for listeners. That's, I mean, he'll eventually get approved, I presume. But
maybe. I don't know. It's kind of funny to watch it.
Yeah. Maybe there'll never be a speaker for this.
I mean,
whatever.
Who cares?
Yeah, I don't care. it's split houses. Nothing's going to get done.
But so he has a very aggressively retrograde view of, I guess.
Well, it's 2001. Men and women should
live with each other. Yeah, it is 2001.
I held a straight face as long as I could.
I'm pretty sure, like, the Mary Tyler Moore show had been on.
No,
like, 30
it's
years
1951.
Even then, Jesus Christ.
Well, yikes. I mean, The Honeymooners was pretty popular. And,
yeah.
I mean, granted, it's a comedy, but.
I Love Lucy, Josh. You know,
that was later. That wasn't on in 51, I don't think. I don't think it's
no,
until
it's a little bit later.
Four
yeah.
or five.
Yeah.
The Euromatch gives zero actual shits if the men beat their wives. Well, like no one's buying this bullshit.
Because
they say that they care and they vet them. Bullshit. No way.
I think that as far as them hiding their illicit activities in like in the books of their legal activities,
mm-hmm.
I think they needed to go to like a more basic course for how to do this, because I feel like it's pretty easy for the authorities to track down their massive brothel warehouse with like, there's like 100 dudes getting sucked off in there at any given time. Yeah. It's insane.
You could hear it, actually. If you listen closely to the episode, you could hear dudes getting blown. It was pretty wild.
But it seems like you need to, you know, as they say, like, don't be taking notes on a criminal conspiracy. Like, don't have those meetings at your already shady but legal business, the mail order bride place.
Now, since Ava actually lived, can her shitbag ex-husband please go to prison for rape and assault?
Right. Good point. That is a good point. And then we kind of get to the thing that really breaks this episode down for me, because I'm loving all these shitbag ex-husbands. I'm loving
ex-paramours.
Ex-whatever you want to call that. I'm loving the zany, fast-paced nature of it. I love that they don't even do any research about whether orchids are parasites or not, which is the whole name of the episode is based on this. And like, what are the other parasites? Is Ava supposed to be a parasite? Is Valentina supposed to be a parasite? Yeah. Who's the fucking parasite?
But Valentina is clearly, but there's also, I mean, okay, the puppet man is clearly molesting Julia.
Well, so, okay, you
don't think he's... This is obvious. That's absolutely happening, and they're not even investigating that.
But Josh...
Because they have too much on their plate here.
I have a totally different headcanon from this, because I think that Puppet Man goes from this, like, okay, Euromatch is
gone. Oh, to the Molesto Muppets?
He probably is the founder of the Molesto Muppets, exactly.
Maybe.
I mean, it seems that you're in one door out
the
other.
But is he using the Molesto Muppets to molest kids?
Right? It's a hard knock life, man.
Yeah. it's very strange to me that the unit is as quick to just assume that Ava killed Irina. Like, they have nothing to go on motive wise
besides the
besides the fact that they're identical twins and Irina, like, but
and that the fact that Ava lived a fast and loose
but
and
wouldn't
crazy
you,
life.
Wouldn't you jump to all of the scumbag men that you've already interviewed as being like, well, it's probably one of those dickheads,
right?
Not the twin sister.
Right. It's like, because like every single one of them, they just keep getting worse and worse and worse. Uh-huh. I mean, I guess maybe the dentist is a slight uptick from Paul Amos, but barely.
I'm not convinced that there's not a lot worse going on.
Hasn't this dentist heard about prenuptial agreements too? Like, who gives a shit if she's a gold digger? Anyways.
Yeah. Then, of course, we find out that there's another sister, Oksana, being exploited by this Romanian criminal enterprise.
What I love, I think you're skipping here slightly, because they go and notify George that it's actually...
Oh, I've basically given up on notes at this point.
No. So they go and notify George that his wife is been dead for 3 years, sure, and that he's been living with a lie.
While he's working outside of...
He's working outside. Contracting. And in true early season SVU fashion, dude doesn't stop working when he finds out that his wife has been dead for 3 years.
He does sit down on the tailgate of the van at
it's only once he realizes
that she stopped going to church. Yes.
Exactly. So he's an SVU superstar. Now, I really don't understand. Like, at a certain point, his character really breaks down for me. Because I get that Ava's been, like, lying to you for a while.
But he's been with her longer than he was with Irina.
A. And B, when you hear why she's been lying to him, it's like, okay, I get that. Yeah, it's totally defensible. She was trying to, like, if she didn't, like, they were going to come kill his daughter. What the fuck, man? Like,
and she's raised this daughter. She's basically this daughter's mother. Like,
exactly. And also, it's like, I don't know. Can't you bond over the trauma? Like, I get that maybe you need, like, a couple weeks to think things over. But, I mean, there's nobody else to talk about who gives a shit besides this lady. And it's
right.
You're not going to have to repay Euromatch for, you know, for your bride price. You've already done that.
Yeah.
So I think actually there's something wrong with George Burton that we don't quite know about, because, like, he seemed like a nice, normal guy. He's got a nice, normal job.
Why can't he just bone the lady that looks just like the lady that he was already boning?
Well, but yeah, but okay, but I guess my problem is joking.
I put it in the coarsest way possible.
No, but I'm casting aspersions at the mail order bride purchasing community. Right.
Yeah,
and I'm sure there's many motivations for doing that. I'm sure some of them are fine people.
But he did go to a mail order bride service, and he basically, you know, got he's.
It
he,
just makes one to wonder choose
to continue on with the facsimile of the one he chose, who has been raising his fucking daughter.
But I'm just saying, what's wrong with this guy that we don't know about? Like, what did he do in his past life that led him to this mail order bride service? And I just don't trust the guy. For a while, I thought he was the one who did it. But then,
because he's like, he's too nice.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We don't trust nice guys. Not in this episode. And that's kind of where it ends. You know, whole little thing with the diplomatic immunity, which there was an actual case with a Georgian diplomat, but Cabot kind of lays it out. But yeah, man, are we ready to rank this thing?
I think so.
Okay. Guys, we rank these episodes every week. We rank on the overall quality of the episode, the quality of the guests, how problematic it was, and the depth and breadth of Lives Ruined. We're trying to come up with a composite score which will allow us to rank it against all the episodes of the show that we will eventually have watched. Let's go back to front this time. So, depth and breadth of Lives Ruined.
Always my favorite. You know, the old back to front.
The old ATM.
I didn't say that. I said BTF.
Anyways, so depth and breadth of Lives Ruined. Let's think. So We have one dead Romanian sister. We have Julia's mom is gone, and her weird dad won't just continue living with the lady who was her mom for the last 3 years, which I don't quite understand.
Who looked like her mom also.
Like, exactly alike. So much so that he didn't know the difference.
And was basically only trying to protect his family.
I mean, she was trying to protect herself, but she was also trying to protect them. It was like it all kind of like, like if they found out that Irina was dead, they were coming for everybody else too.
Yeah.
You have, you know, the Romanian diplomatic corps is probably in ruins because of this. Like, what a scandal.
Tatters.
What a scandal.
Tatters.
Think about the downtown scumbag community. You know, your various importers, dentists, and whatever the fuck Paul Amos is. I guess erudite New York Times book review authors. think about them.
Yeah. We also have the probably scores of Romanian.
It was a large
Well, it
warehouse.
Wasn't just Romanian. There were three different countries, but the Eastern Bloc sex workers who had been trafficked in, who had been, you know, I mean, Oksana was there for what, 3 years?
Yeah. That's a long time.
It's a long fucking time to be trying to fuck your way out of a debt that you're never going to fuck your way out of.
Yeah.
You've got the daughter.
I mean, that whole world, that.
No, well, but the daughter of the daughter,
Julia,
the
yeah.
Burton girl.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, I mean, that's a terrible life to grow up with, but that world of that sex warehouse is a very dark one that I think they could have enlarged a little bit, you know?
Well, and that's where, I mean, really, that's where that 6 minutes of Dr. Stanton storyline, like, Cervito's good.
Yeah.
Not saying he's not, but like,
you don't need to burn all of these actors.
I feel like both you and
episode.
I feel like that was a more interesting, like, if I had to go down a rabbit hole in this episode, I'd rather have it have the sex warehouse.
Or make the episode about the fucking Stantons, because that was an interesting, I mean, make another episode about them.
Sure.
Interesting storyline there. Cervito's very good. He could he could be the guy, or at least like maybe
agreed.
The
he's
guy.
So fucking good in Banshee.
He's fantastic in The Sopranos too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's really good.
No, I really like Matt Cervito.
Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, the fallout has to be pretty high on this.
It's pretty high. I mean, there's a lot.
The depth and breadth is just too like,
there's a dead body that we deeply care about because of like the whatever four principles that are surrounding her. And, you know, it's like also this massive sex slavery.
Sure. It's safe thing. To say there are probably dozens of sex workers who have been, you know, exploited in this warehouse.
At least. Yeah. So yeah.
I think it's hard to get away. I mean, the body count's low, but like I just think it's hard to get out of this without that category being like an 8 or a 9, right?
My inclination is to give it a 7, but maybe 8, because we have a lot.
I think
of
it's just there
here.
Too many. I think there are too many trafficked women in this episode to have it be.
Yeah, and
be
plus
a 7. I think it's an 8.
While they don't fully land the family trauma, they're definitely,
I mean, they try to with that dumb button, but it doesn't work.
It's weird. Anyways, yeah, okay, 8's fine. So problematic. Now, we have some really bad boyfriends, some of the most problematic boyfriends I've seen. We have this weird obsession with Romania in early season SVU, which I don't quite understand, but is, you know, there's a lot of,
I mean, we were both like, you know, college aged adults at this point.
I didn't think about Romania that much at this point. I mean, occasionally
I never
think
thought
about Romania.
I literally never thought about Romania.
All right, so it's not as problematic as some, right? So we aren't treated to like a main character in lingerie for an uncomfortably long scene.
No,
like we were last week. We do have a bunch of bad boyfriends. My inclination.
Well, and all the beeches that we could hear in the way.
We could. I was going to say, like,
I'm joking. You couldn't actually hear them.
But I think like a 6, because I think like between Matt Sloan and Paul Amos.
Yeah. I mean, mail order ponytail is a real doucher. I think.
Real bad guy.
Like supreme, supreme douche canoe.
Like, it's shocking he hasn't, you know, committed a sex crime. Well, he's in Long Island, so I guess that would be Nassau.
Sure.
Nassau,
but he also we obviously know that he's been convicted of storming the Capitol on January 6th.
Most likely. Do you think he
there's no way he's you know, fully living in the manosphere.
So what do you think he did? Do you think he rubbed his butt on AOC's door handle, or do you think he like took a piss in some, you know, sacred document?
Oh, He stuck each and every one of Nancy Pelosi's pens up his ass.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
and then put it back in the pen holder.
I'm sure somebody did that. I'm 100% sure somebody did that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he keistered her entire collection of pens.
All right, moving on. So
I feel like that's the episode title. Yeah.
So what? Just give me a number, Josh. Give me a number.
It's probably it's got to be like a 6, right?
That's what I was thinking. Because yeah. It's not
out of
this. We're talking about this show, man, right? So
yeah.
Like last week was a 7, and that was Rollins's, you know, life spinning wildly out of control, only to be saved by, you know, Don Alex Machina, which is, you know.
Yeah.
Which is problematic story.
But I mean, that one didn't have the, you know, that one wasn't really setting up the Hackensack hydrangea market either, you know?
That is true. But I think 6 does kind of bump it slightly. And maybe that's
listeners are gonna actually think that's true.
Maybe the depth and breadth kind of wraps in the hydrangeas there too, because the poor Sawyers are getting ripped off for their lucrative
They're losing plants. Thousands. They're losing thousands of dollars in hydrangea money that they don't even know. They're mature hydrangeas. You don't know how far that's going to go in a Hackensack.
You can't just buy that at the store, Josh.
Hackensackers love that shit.
All right, moving on. So this might be, I don't know, the next two are the ones that I guess are complicated for me. So guess it's a total mess for both the quality of the episode and for the quality of the guests. So we'll start with the guests. There's too many of them for any of them to actually have done anything.
Yeah. Except for the guy playing Paul. Amos.
Yeah.
LePage. Well, Jerome LePage.
Jerome LePage.
He lands his bullshit.
And Matt Servito both actually land it, right?
And I think Millie Avital does too, to an extent. I think
it's such there's a maybe, weird character.
There's maybe further that she could have gone with it. It's also, yeah, it is weird because she's playing it. She's basically playing two different people.
Exactly. Even though one of them is, they're both the
one
same person,
dead,
but
she's
one of
playing,
them's pretending to be
sure,
the other person.
Right.
But still.
Yeah. The motives are different when she's playing, you know, each version of the person that she's playing.
So. No, I don't think that she's like, it gives a bad performance at all. I do kind of think that George's performance is lacking.
Yeah, it's weird because I know that he's like a better actor than this.
I mean, like Scorsese wouldn't get him back for like 3 fucking movies if he wasn't. Yeah. So.
And like, I think this is just sort of a byproduct of like having to jump into a procedural.
Yeah. It's probably, there's a lot going on here. You don't know.
Sure.
You don't know exactly. But his character, the emotional depth did not land for me from that character. And I thought that was an important role because
it was.
We're supposed to like empathize with this guy at the end because his wife died and he doesn't want to sleep with the woman who looks exactly like his wife.
But the motive bullshit, like the motivation for his character. Mm-hmm. Like doesn't make sense on the page.
It doesn't. No, and
so I don't think it's a matter of him. Like, if you get the script, you read the script and you're like, okay, I guess I don't really know what my character's motivation is. Yeah. And you know, I definitely think they're still like figuring things out.
They
in season two,
yeah, exactly. Like the writing team is probably not as developed by Neil Baer as it would be, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line.
Sure, and you know he's a first time showrunner in season two.
Yeah,
you know by the time you get to 6 or 7, it's like, oh no, this is a well oiled machine.
Yeah,
but in season two, it's still definitely sort of like a crapshoot, and you don't know who I didn't look at who directed this or wrote it, but.
Written by Martin Weiss, directed by David Platt.
Yeah, you just made up people.
No.
guest stars. Is this a 4?
Yeah, I think so.
3?
I think so. No,
3 maybe?
No, I think 4.
No, I think it's a 3.
You think it's a 3? There's so many people.
Yeah, but I think it's a 3 because...
I think that the one...
I think we have to take the measure against the higher scores in the other categories.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I think it's a tweener, and I think that given the fact that the fallout and the problematic scores are kind of high, I think it's probably if we're because I felt like it was sort of a 3 or 4, and then I said 4, and then felt like okay, I actually think 3 is probably.
But I see what you're talking about because I think this is one of those like kind of it's one of those insane fever dreams like the season one episodes where it really could have landed. It could have been a really great episode if. Like if they pared down things,
yep.
If just a couple things worked a little bit better, and I think one of them being the like whatever is going on with George made more sense slash was more
sure
like gut wrenching. If we
right because there's a way to do that and have it land and it
yeah
land.
And who
when it's not against the guest it's not a knock on the guest stars necessarily
yeah
but
it's hard for us to know because
but there's less for them to do because they so many they don't give it to them.
Guests you know yeah. like that none of them get much time like the
well and then they go back to the landlord and it's like okay I mean she's fine but like we're really going back
we
here?
Don't yeah,
we need again, to go a like, second time
weird time management stuff so like the guest that I really liked Matt Servito, I liked LePage. I liked the landlady, but still.
Well, like, we quote liked LePage did good work.
Yeah, but of those three like, people, yeah, I mean that's what I mean. Like like those characters like really stood out to me as being like as they
but
were like
all of them are superfluous to the story.
Not a single one of them matters. I mean, I guess LePage matters a little bit more because he's. Like part of the reason why. But even then, it's I first time I watched it, I thought it was like. It was Ava's fuck up with LePage that caused well not LePage with I'm sorry Martin Amis's obscure brother that like caused Oksana to be the sex slave which maybe
now you have to
better.
Leave all the Martin Amis bullshit in there but there's also the weird like okay the Stantons are absolutely unnecessary.
It's a total waste of time. And even though Servito is like kind of gives a nice little role there and it's a touching role, it's just time wasted that you're taking away from like characters that we're supposed to care
that matter.
About. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. And again, it's not that it's anybody's fault.
No. Well, it's not that it's any of the actors' fault. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say, but I just can't imagine given how little time any of them had on screen, you know. I would have liked more time with the creepy orchid man, you know, because at least maybe we would have like. I don't.
Yeah,
quite
give us more time with a perp. Give us more time with George. Give us more time with.
I don't understand
Millie Avital's character. Like,
why the deputy chief of mission to the United Nations is going around murdering people? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So, Josh, let leads us to the last category: the overall quality. Now, it is. Fun, and that the first time you watch it, it goes pretty fast.
It goes really fast.
But it's a completely hot mess that doesn't it doesn't stand up to any scrutiny at all. The motivations of the characters don't make sense. You feel like you're wasting good actors.
Right.
And at the end of it, you're wasting a great title, too, because Parasite could have... Could be such a great episode.
Could be a Best Picture winner.
That's what I'm saying.
I feel like it's sitting somewhere between a 4 and a 5 because it's a mess, but it's fun. And for the same reason that I think Guest Stars needs to be probably knocked down a notch, I think that quality needs to be knocked down.
So let's call it 4.
I am inclined to say 4.
Yeah, I think that's fine. That gives us a 5.25, which I think it's fine because it's, I mean, it's really fun in ways. And if you're kind of just like, if you're, it's the kind of episode where if you're not really paying attention, you have no idea what's going on. But at the same time, if you're just coming and going, at least there's fun things happening on screen every time you kind of, you know, look up from your phone or whatever. So it's got that going for it. But I feel like it's one of those ones when I come back to it in a few weeks to edit it, I'm not going to remember at all what this fucking episode was about.
You won't, I promise.
But I think that is our cue to turn the screws and figure out what the next one's going to be.
So we're heading over to episode.lol, which was built for this podcast by friend of the pod, Flett, who along with future co-host of Adam and I on our next podcast, on our second podcast, created cinequote.net. Yeah. Go there. Your daily quiz show with movie quotes, just the audio.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a good.
It's a lot of fun. It's better than the other movie ones, certainly, but it's you know, akin to Wordle or Worldle.
Yeah, it's that kind of idea, but it's a very good presentation because of the way you interact with it. It's it has slight little.
We're not getting any money for this either,
but I'm proud of them because it's a good one.
Yeah. No, it is good. Heading over to episode.lol, the tape is spinning. Bill and Ted.
They despise this shit.
Oh, I hate that part.
And we've landed in season one, episode 9.
Okay.
Stocks and Bondage.
Man, I can't fucking wait. That's fantastic.
The title alone. Doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
Benson and Stabler look into the murder of a respected derivatives trader. Oxymoron right there.
Yeah.
No such thing. There's no such thing as a respected derivatives trader. Their investigation takes them into the world of bondage and sadomasochism.
No way, man.
What?
So, guys,
yes.
Obviously, probably what I would recommend is if you're sick of listening to advertisements on these long shows, you should consider joining our Patreon. We have two different tiers. One will get you all of our back episodes ad-free. Now, if you want to pay a couple extra bucks, you can get our entire back.
We're talking the difference between $3 and $5.
Yeah. No, but I understand both options, but if you want to pay a couple more, you'll get our episodes a week early. You'll get all the uncensored, exciting Martin Amis talk that Josh and I threw down on this one.
And the aborted PJ Brown talk.
You'll also get our movie club episodes, which are fun. The most recent one would be that amazing John Stamos film that I'm looking forward to watching.
Never Too Young to Die.
Never Too Young to Die. We haven't decided on our February one yet, but we should figure that one out soon because...
Sure.
It's getting close. Anyways, there's good stuff there. Let me...
I might push for Inherent Vice.
Interesting. That's an idea. It's a little mass market for our usual trend, but it's something to talk about. I mean,
no one watched Inherent Vice either, Adam.
I feel like the Munchies have seen Inherent Vice, or many of the Munchies. If we talk about Inherent Vice, it's just going to be me describing in detail the barge bar in
Multipanikuchen. Multipanikuchen. Yeah. Anyway.
There's good stuff there. You can also find us on all the socials. We're at Munch by Benson, anywhere that we're there. So we're not on Snapchat. We're not on TikTok. But most of the other socials, we have some sort of presence. Or we will eventually have some sort of presence, maybe. Who knows? But look for us. We're there. We have a subreddit. It's r/MunchByBenson. We have a pretty active Discord. That's fun. It's in the show notes. It's the easiest way to find
it. Yeah, the invite's in the show notes.
Uh-huh. You can find our website, which has links to almost all this stuff, plus our merch. That's munchmybenson.com. Or you can contact us via email. That's munchmybenson@gmail.com. There's a theme here.
That's munchmybenson.
Did I not say that?
Adam said it. Adam, to me, it sounded like you said munchmymenson.
Maybe later. but we also have merch. You can find that at the website. All these links are in most places. They're all in the show notes, so it's easy to find them. But guys,
we appeared on Storytellers. You know, probably a month and a half ago when this episode drops.
Yeah,
but we appeared on Storytellers. Adam and I did. Very fun episode. That's in the links in the show notes as well.
Josh wrote me into creative writing for the first time in like a decade. But I think it was a fun episode. Yeah. I think it went pretty well.
I think it was really fun.
Yeah.
this was more of a handoff than a collaboration, but it was still fun.
Yeah, and there's also one person from like a true crime podcast and another from like a horror stories podcast. And it was like
an Austrian fun. Horror stories. Yeah, also.
It's like fun different perspectives, but I think the whole thing.
It was like having a female Werner Herzog.
Yeah, it was
final segment.
Yeah. great. But guys, I think it's time to get out there and start munching. But if you do, don't be like the Adrian Paul aficionado. Don't storm the Capitol whilst your mail order bride is stuck at home. You know, don't do that, guys.
You're never going to look like what you think you're going to look like.
He had 500 years to perfect that look, Josh.
Yeah, if you're aspiring to be Adrian Paul, you're not going to pull it off.
He's studied the katana blade for, like, lifetimes, okay? It's just you're never going to be that cool.
But that's, you know why?
You're because never going to sell
antiques. It's because he couldn't have the Toledo Salamanca that Connor did.
Well, he didn't need it, Josh.
You know that's true.
He studied with masters of the blade. That's why.
But Connor was... the one of which there could only be one of.
We can agree to disagree on this because I think there can only be one, and he had a ponytail and speaks.
Well, then there was some alien
Scottish with a French accent. anyways, on that note, guys, we'll see you next week.
Out.
Satisfaction guaranteed for 90 days or your money back. Interested?
Too easy. Without abject suffering, I wouldn't know what to do with myself.